you're too busy to set goals, or if you're unsure what the right goals are for you, or if you're just not clear on what's next for you in your business and your life, I've got the solution you've been looking for. Join my free 7-day course designed for athletic-minded men who want to maximize their potential in business and life. And I'm going to help you create a clear plan for achieving your biggest goals faster. So if you feel like you're driving with the parking brake on, if you feel like you're going 100 miles an hour all day long, but not really moving the needle in your life, get started with me today. Get instant access to this 7-day course where you and I will get to interact live with each other. Plus, you'll have access to a community of like-minded, high-performing, athletic-minded, competitive men looking to unlock their next level as well. Just visit jimharshawjr.com/free. That's jimharshawjr.com/free.
If there is a limiting belief that I had, it was not knowing what I was capable of. Really not knowing that I could do something like that.
Welcome to another episode of Success for the Athletic-Minded Man. Real talk on harnessing your athletic drive for clarity, consistency, and focus in business and life. This is your host, Jim Harshaw Jr., and today I bring you Steve Hoback. Have you ever heard the quote, "Never meet your heroes"? Well, the reason that quote exists is because they say don't meet your heroes because it makes them out to be a real person, and you realize that they are not everything that you thought that they were. Well, this is a little bit of that case for me. I got to work out and meet and be a workout partner with Steve Hoback for years, and I know my hero, and he's a real person, a real human being, and he's not some sort of person off in the distance who I don't really know. He's somebody who is in my life, in my circle, in my workout group, who's an absolute inspiration to me and for all those who know him. And the more we have people like that in our lives, it makes us realize, okay, I can do great things as well. And interestingly, I served in that role for him a little bit. And you'll hear in some of these stories here today. And then he far surpassed me in the topic of the day here, which is his running and ultra running career, which is just absolutely, absolutely an incredible story. So if you have anyone in your life, and maybe it's you, but if you have others in your life who want to raise their standard, want to achieve a new level, or maybe they're stuck, maybe they're plateaued, and that could be in their health and fitness, that could be in their career, in their business, or even in their marriage, forward this episode to them. Share this with them, because Steve shares how he broke through and how we all can break through our own limiting beliefs and achieve dreams that we've never even dreamt. Here we go, my interview with my friend, Steve Hoback. In F3 parlance, we call him Soundcheck, and my name's Grappler. F3 is Fitness, Fellowship, and Faith, and we reference that a little bit here, and I've talked about it in different episodes. But here we go, my interview with Soundcheck, otherwise known as Steve Hoback. Take us back to that moment when your friend invited you to run that first 5K.
Okay, so that was probably, I think it was around 2016-ish, because he was kind of a workout buddy. We were swimming a little bit together, and we kind of hit the gym occasionally, and he had this idea about doing a 5K, and both of us at that time were pretty overweight, and I would say really overweight, but we were kind of committed to at least holding each other accountable to doing something. And, you know, after months and months, it really wasn't working. It wasn't doing much. But he invited me to, he said, "Hey, let's run a 5K. I got this buddy that actually is a race director for it. And he wanted to have me join him." And so I hesitantly agreed and said, "Okay, well, I'll start training and trying to work my way up to a 5K. And anyway, we both kind of agreed that our goal would be to break a 12-minute mile. Let me just say, I knew nothing about running at that point. I had actually never run a 5K. I'd never run except in high school, probably during football. That was about it.
And you were how old at the time?
I must have been about 56 at that point. Anyway, so we basically did some basic training for it. We ran a little bit together. I did some running on my own. And I remember going, barely making it a mile, and thought I was going to die. And just really, it was probably one of the hardest physical things that I had ever done. And trying to push past that 1 mile mark and just to continually run. And it ended up where finally, after, I don't know, quite a number of weeks, I was able to get to the 3 mile mark and run continuously. And mostly it seemed like I was walking at that time. But anyway, so we did our 5K and we both came in together at 11:59 pace. So we made our goal, which was, you know, and of course I look back on that now and that was like, I thought, you know, I never want to run that again. That was probably the hardest thing I'd ever done, physically that is. And so it was a nice feeling to actually accomplish something that, you know, you set out to do. And again, I had no reference point at all for what would be a good race, a good time or anything. So I thought, you know, okay, so we did okay. And then I decided to, I mean, I didn't really keep up running at that point or after that. And I think it was like 1 year later, he said, hey, you want to do that again? And I was like, okay. So I'd kind of start training again for it. And, you know, we did the next one. And I think this time it was, you know, it was a goal to break like maybe an 11 minute. And so anyway, so we did, I think I did maybe a 10 and a half minute pace at that time. And again, still really, really hard. And then I just dropped it at that point. I was like, this is too hard. I'm not running anymore. That was not so great experience and certainly not motivating to keep going.
Yeah, right. So for the listener, you're thinking like, oh, this is the spark. Wow. He runs this 5K. He does it again the next year. He makes a better time. This is this spark that just sets off this journey. Nope. And so where did you pick it up? Like, where did things go from there? How did you go from that to ran two 5Ks, didn't do very well in those? Well, I should say didn't do very well compared to where you're at now. Those are just fine times for anybody. But there's this gap between there and ultra marathon. What was the next step in the phase for you?
Well, I'll tell you a little bit about my F3, the Fitness Fellowship and Faith journey that I went on. I had another friend, and this was 2018. Kept telling me about this F3 workout group where a bunch of men get together and exercise, kind of a boot camp style workout. And I was definitely not interested. And he kept hitting me up week after week, and literally week after week. He says, man, you got to come to this thing. You got to come to this thing. And so finally, I really honestly got tired of him asking me. I said, look, you're my friend. For you, I'm going to go. And that I was like, I'll do this for you, but I'll do it once and that's it. And I just really, now at that time, I was 65 pounds heavier than I am right now.
65 pounds?
65. Wow. There was a whole journey where I went through of actually changing my diet and all this stuff. And we can talk about that because that's actually pretty significant to where I am now. But I ended up coming with him. It was actually on December 1st, 2018. It was another one of those moments. It's like, I think I'm going to die. And it was a workout in Charlottesville with some other guys. And the first workout, it was like, you warm up and then we ran up a hill. And then we did what's called these burp blocks. And if you know what those are, it's just like doing burpees. Okay, so my first experience with F3 was running up a hill and doing burpees continuously around the block in the city. And it was pathetic.
I think I was at that workout, actually. I think I was at that workout.
Yeah, well, that was Cheesy Poof was leading that one. And anyway, so
Cheesy Poof, by the way, for the listeners, as I mentioned in the intro, we all do have these silly names. And Cheesy Poof is our leader, also known as our Nantan here locally in Charlottesville. So anyway, great guy. But sorry, go ahead, Steve.
So anyway, so we were doing the burp blocks and I made it through the end of the workout and I was beat. And I thought to myself, it's like, okay, maybe this is something that I not only would benefit from, but I actually need at this point. And I had already, like I mentioned, I had changed my diet about 3 months before that. I'd started dropping some weight and I really wanted to get in shape. And mostly because I saw my grandkids, I started to have grandkids and didn't want to be a fat, lazy old man in my 60s or 70s and not be able to play with them. Or I wanted to at least be somewhat of an example of what a 60 or 70 year old guy could look like. And I know it was just kind of a wake up call for me. So after that workout, I thought, you know, I really do need to maybe stick with this. And so I came back the next week and I don't know. And so week after week, I would do this and I probably couldn't tell the difference. I was so sore after every workout for like 3 days where I could hardly move. You know, after probably about 5 or 6 weeks of doing this, I decided to add a second day and then, you know, I was less sore and was starting to see some of the benefits and was able to start doing some of the exercises. Anyway, I remember one day, one of the guys there, he was joking around with me and he was giving me a hard time. And he told me, he said, you know, I want to confess something to you. He said, you were one of those guys when you first showed up, he said, I actually bet some other guys that you would never show up again after the first workout. And he says, I can't believe that you stuck with this. And so anyway, it was pretty cool, you know, and it was one of those things like, you know, I was certainly the example of the guy that's going to be a one and done, at least on the surface. But there was something motivating me to, again, not to look at the short term, but really what is my ultimate goal here is just to be healthy. Honestly, it's just to be healthy and be in good shape in my 60s and my 70s and beyond. And I knew that the two things that made the biggest difference was diet and exercise. And so I really had at that point committed to doing it. And anyway, and F3 was hugely instrumental in me getting to where I am today. And anyway, so I did that. I was committed to doing that for several years. Sort of the next milestone is I had started running a little bit during the workouts because that's part of what the workouts do and incorporate some sort of jogging or generally not any a lot of miles, but it's just incorporated in the workout. So I decided somebody was doing a sort of a pre-workout run where you just get about a mile in or so and before the workout. And I decided to start doing that and added a little bit of jogging into my workout. Anyway, so that was, I started to feel pretty good, even though I, you know, I did not like running, but I was like, okay, this is another one of those components of the exercise. And I thought, okay, some cardio that would really help me out. And anyway, so I did that for some time. And then at one point, one of the guys, I think it was Cheesy Poof, had mentioned something about doing a relay race with somebody forming an F3 team and wanted to know if I would be interested in being an alternate for that. Here's the old guy, you know, being an alternate for a running race who hasn't really run at all. Has only done 2 5Ks. I said, you know, I told him, I was like, no, it's not for me. I'm not interested in doing it. He says, come on, man, I've seen you run. You can run okay. You can do this. And anyways, really encouraging. And it sparked something in me. And I actually said, okay, here's the deal. I'll train as if I'm going to run it. But I'm probably, you know, but I'm not really that interested in it. Well, so as the weeks went on, I started training a little bit more, adding a little more mileage. And ironically, it's like one of the guys got hurt and I ended up being asked to actually join the team. So I joined this team where it was a relay race where 12 guys go for a little over 200 miles, running continuously, trading in and out, you know, where the guys were, you know, one guy would do 3 miles, the next guy might do 6 miles or whatever. And so I was given probably the lowest cumulative miles on the team. So I think a total of 11 miles is what I ended up running out of that 200 miles. But that experience was so profound for me. The camaraderie, just being able to do something with other guys that actually, oddly enough, we won the race. Being on a winning team, even though I was I was the least of the, you know, capable guys in there. But being on that winning team was huge for me. I'm not even sure I can explain why. And maybe it wasn't the victory so much as it being part of something. Because certainly I didn't contribute necessarily to much of the winning part of it. But I was a part of something that was truly satisfying. And it motivated me because I had trained. I thought, you know, I've actually done a pretty good amount of training for this. I think I'm just going to continue to keep this level of running up. And that's when I really started enjoying running. It was the first time that I had ever experienced kind of a motivation to actually keep on going. That was my real motivator to get me to running was I had trained and then, you know, I didn't want to lose what I had because I thought, okay, well, I built up to this point. Why not maintain it? So that's really what motivated me to get started.
Quick interruption. Hey, if you like what you're hearing, be sure to get the notes, quotes, and links in the action plan from this episode. Just go to jimharshawjr.com/action. That's jimharshawjr.com/action to get your free copy of the action plan. Now back to the show.
And it's interesting, and I'm going to point this out for the listeners. You had a friend invite you to the 5K. And then same friend invited you to do the second 5K. And then you had another friend invite you to come out to F3 for the workouts. Then you had another friend invite you to the race. And then when you're in the race, it was the camaraderie, the friendships, the people that was exciting. You know, it was fun for you, enjoyable. And then also being part of something, part of a team, right? In that winning team. And then also setting the standard for your grandkids and also wanting to be mobile for your grandkids. So like every single motivator that you mentioned involved other people. And so for the listener, I want you to think about what are the motivators for you? Maybe it's not grandkids, or maybe it is grandkids, or whatever it is. Like, what are the motivators? And also something we talk about in my coaching program is called the environment of excellence. Who can you get around? Who are the people that if you're in their orbit, they're just going to raise the standard for you? And whether it's in your fitness, whether it's in your career, whether it's in your relationships, whatever it is, like, who are the people that you need to be around? And when you're around them, they just hold you to a higher standard, whether, you know, directly or indirectly. Those are all key parts of Steve's growth and development and finding that motivation here, because he talked about, like, he ran the 5K. He's like, well, I'm never going to do that again. That sucked, right? I ran the first mile. That was the hardest thing I've ever done. And now here he is running ultra marathons and Boston Marathon, et cetera. So whenever I ran the marathon in 2020, myself and Jeff, my neighbor, goes by Dyfus in F3, we committed to running a marathon, and then COVID happened. The Pittsburgh Marathon got shut down, so we stayed here in Charlottesville and made up our own marathon route, and we ran it. Jeff and I ran it, and there were several guys like you, Steve, who jumped in and joined us. You ran 8 miles with us that day. You committed. I think you said, I'm going to run 8 miles with you. You ended up running, I think, 13 with us that day.
13 is it's the furthest I had ever run. And again, I appreciate what you just said. It's like, okay, these are guys that I know. These are guys that I want to hang with. And I decided, okay, well, I'm just going to run as long as I can. And anyway, I had never run 13 miles before. Never even thought that was possible. But yeah. So, you know, you two guys doing that, it was like, I can't believe these guys are going to run a marathon. This is crazy. How can they do that? So it was motivating for me. It's like, you know, and at that point, I never actually had any thought that I would run a marathon or further than that. That was not even, it wasn't even in my vocabulary at that point.
So this was another step, another bar, another hurdle that mentally you had cleared. And so at this point, and I want to get to the, you know, when did you sign up for your next first marathon and Boston Marathon and Ultra? But looking back, were there limiting beliefs that you held that you were just blowing up? Whatever beliefs that were keeping you from doing this kind of work, this kind of running before, were just false beliefs, right?
Yeah. I hadn't actually even thought about that in terms of running, but I, you know, now that I think about it, you know, just to run more than 3 miles seemed impossible to me. I mean, to run 3 miles was impossible. To run more than that, it's like, you know, who are these people that are running the 10 miles, the marathons? And anyway, I just had no grid for this whatsoever. So part of it was, I was ignorant, didn't have any concept that these things were possible, though I certainly knew people were doing it. But I think for me, I don't recall having a sense about just wanting to do more. I think for me, if there is a limiting belief that I had, it was not knowing what I was capable of, really not knowing that I could do something like that. And I guess having the sense that it's like, okay, it's not for me, it's too hard. Or one of the factors is that, you know, am I going to injure myself? Can my knees hold out at my age? You know, and I had people saying, you're going to ruin your knees and you're not going to, you know, I mean, so I had some of those kind of naysayers coming in and saying, you don't want to do this. But, you know, I thought, well, why not? Maybe I'm fine. Maybe I won't have any knee problems or leg problems or whatever. But again, part of this is something that I have said in the past. There are a lot of kind of throughout my life, I use this term as the dreams that I've never dreamt. Okay. And so part of it is, and I don't know what keeps me from doing it, but I tend to not have these big dreams. And mostly possibly because of disappointment or I'll fail. I don't know exactly why, but I've had a lot of those things in the course of my life. And this is one of those. I never dreamed one of running. I never dreamed of doing a marathon. And so I never dreamt big in terms of those kinds of things. But what has motivated me is that I've always wanted to be better than I am today, tomorrow. I want to see progress. I'd like to see something where I'm better at and I'll go after it just to get better. I've just never been satisfied with just being the same person I was yesterday. And if that makes sense.
It makes a ton of sense. That's a great mindset and a great lesson for all of us, because you slowly added on miles, slowly kept breaking through limiting beliefs or beliefs you didn't even know that were there, limiting beliefs you didn't even know existed. And then how did you go from that day where we ran the marathon, you ended up doing half of it with us, thankfully, and which for me, because I really struggled.
you had a rough day.
I had a rough day. And then what took you from there to marathon?
Well, when I realized I could actually run 13 miles, I thought, okay, that's kind of cool. I've never done that before. Well, can I do 14 or 15 or can I do more? And I think it was somewhat after that that I was like, you know what? For the first time, I thought, okay, well, maybe I can start thinking about running a marathon. I wonder what that would be like. I wonder what would it take to actually run a marathon? I mean, since you guys did it, it's like, okay, these are guys, I mean, I think you are the first two guys that I ever knew that actually ran a marathon. I don't know that I may have been around people. I just was not aware. And I'm sure that's the case. But, you know, I was like, hey, and I saw you guys train. I saw what you guys did to put, you know, what kind of mileage you had to put in to get there. And the fact that you and Dyfus was putting it in, I was like, okay, maybe this is something I can do. I can get to that next level. And I decided, it's like, okay, I think I'll see if I can do a marathon. And I started training for it. I hadn't even signed up, but I started hitting the miles, adding a little more miles in. And I had no clue how to train for a marathon except for what you guys did. That was kind of my model at the time. And I'm a researcher. My profession is as an engineer. So I don't mind digging in and doing the research. So I did start doing some research and figuring out, okay, you know, is there a good plan? And I decided to sign up for the Richmond Marathon. That's a local popular race for a lot of people. And it's supposed to be relatively flat, quote unquote. I learned later it's not flat. So I trained for it and ran it. And actually, and oddly enough, I actually was running that with the purpose I wanted to run the Boston Marathon at some point. So I was like, if I'm going to run a marathon, I want to run the marathon. So in order to get into Boston, you have to qualify. And so Richmond was the closest qualifying race. And so I ran the race and it was a stretch for me to actually qualify, knowing what my training had been. And I had made it and I was doing really well up to mile 22. And I actually thought, okay, hey, I'm gonna qualify. And I had to go to the bathroom so bad. I stopped at this. There were two porta potties at mile 22, and there were two, I assume, runners inside the porta potties that were taking forever. Well, by that time, I was starting to cool down. Finally, just said, hey, we're in a race, people, let's go. And so anyway, went into, did my business, came back out, and my legs started to seize up. And so I couldn't, it took me another mile of walking just to kind of get them to unfreeze. And I mean, it was a really bad experience. And I thought, okay, now I'm not going to qualify. But I was 1 minute past my qualifying time, which was still, I was like, okay, that's cool. So I at that point, I actually knew that I could do this. You know, the circumstance, my first marathon, it was a great learning experience. And, you know, you had to learn about the nutrition and the hydration and all that stuff. You know, I didn't know anything about any of that. And so I thought, okay, great experience. That was my first marathon and it still did pretty decent considering.
Sure. And you ended up eventually qualifying for Boston.
I did. Yeah. So there was another somewhat local race down in Virginia Beach. And so I ran that one. I did 5 minutes better than the qualifying time. So I was able to get into Boston.
What was that moment like? And maybe it was a slow build, so there wasn't some sort of, you know, crescendo of a moment. But you went from running a mile was one of the hardest things I've done, and I, you know, struggling to get a mile, to freaking Boston. What was that like? I mean, what was that realization like? Did it hit you? Or was it just kind of like, no, this is just another, you know, barrier I broke.
Oh, no, it hit me. I remember when I got in this race, the second marathon, I remember getting to mile 22. Okay, how ironic. I didn't even think about this. But I got to mile 22 and it's like, and I knew what my time and I knew what my pace was going to be. And there was this guy that I knew from Charlottesville. He was kind of at this cheer zone. He saw me and he started running with me a little bit. And anyway, he was excited to see me. And he's like, hey, dude, I was telling him as I was running, I said, dude, I'm going to Boston. And he's like, how can you tell? He says, you haven't even finished the race. I said, dude, I'm going to Boston. So I knew at that point, unless I fell over or something and just died, I was going to meet my time. So I got to the finish line and it was just like, I can't believe this. I'm going to qualify for Boston and I'm going to run Boston. You know, it's like, okay, the dream that I never dreamt, right? I mean, so it's crazy, you know, that I was able to get to that point. And of course, again, second marathon, learning how to train properly, but also, you know, some of the other, how to maintain your pace. And anyway, it was a really good experience.
What did it feel like when you showed up in Boston and the gun went off, you're on the line, and here we go, the Boston Marathon?
Well, one, it's overwhelming with how many people that are there. And, you know, in Boston, it's a point-to-point race. So they bus you out on these school buses. It's about a 45-minute to an hour ride out there to the starting line. And so, you know, the whole time you're like, this is very surreal. And, you know, with literally, you know, what, 30,000 people being bussed out to Hopkinton to be able to, you know, start the race. And then, you know, you're one of 30,000 people, you know, you start on the line. And just that everything seems so surreal. And then, you know, you start the race and then you're, you know, you got 26.2 miles and literally like of sheer people cheering you on. And it's like nothing I've ever experienced, not even close in my running experience. And so for 26 miles, you got people just really encouraging you. And of course, all the runners on the course. And that was particularly, I don't know, it was just challenging. There was some weather. It was heavy rain at times, and it was fairly cool or almost cold for that day. But I remember getting near the finish line. And I literally was like in the last, I don't know, few hundred yards. And I'm looking up at the sign that was Boston Marathon 2023. And I'm just like, I can't believe this. The sign is getting closer. And I'm like, I'm going to finish this. I can't believe that I'm going to finish the Boston Marathon. And actually at a really good pace. I mean, I finished with a 3:28, which was well below for my age group and qualified for the next year during that race, which was one of my goals. But Jim, I got to the finish line and I probably wasn't, I don't know, maybe 20 yards past the finish line. And I literally broke. I mean, I literally started weeping because I could not believe that I had experienced this thing. That I had done this thing, that I had, it's a dream that I had never dreamt, right? It was just, it was crazy. And probably for, you know, 5 minutes, I was just this elation, overwhelming sense of accomplishment and just, you know, I don't want to say being proud of myself, but being proud of something that I never imagined doing. And anyway, and then I froze after that. I mean, froze literally. It was so cold. I mean, it was just very, very surreal that whole time.
You broke through so many barriers mentally and physically to get there. I got to be part of your journey the whole way, just, you know, working out with you and seeing you. And, you know, I saw the Steve who was overweight and just getting started, and I saw the Steve who freaking crushed the Boston Marathon. And like you said, it's just a tunnel of people cheering you on. Contrast that with the ultra marathon experience at, say, I don't know, Holiday Lake, I know, is one that's sort of local to us here in Virginia, but you're running even further. You're running on trails, which is a lot harder. And there's not a line of people cheering you on the entire way. Contrast that experience.
They're really two very different types of running. And I remember the first time I got on a trail and I had been road running. That was all I knew. And I don't even remember exactly how I got into it, but I think somebody, again, another person said, hey, you know, maybe come try our trail. And so I remember running my first trail, which is not too far from where I live. And I looked at my watch and I was like, oh my gosh, I can't, I'm doing a 10 and a half minute pace. And I'm thinking, I can't, that's not possible. I literally thought something was wrong with my watch because I thought this is crazy. I felt like I was running like an 8 minute pace. And it's like, well, something's not right. Anyway, so it took me a little bit to get oriented to the trail, the whole different trail mindset, because you're just not going to run anywhere near as fast. But yet the perceived effort is not much different, right? So you know, but it's a different beast altogether. So anyway, so that was the kind of the first experience with trail running. I don't know. I actually didn't even know anybody that, certainly not in our F3 group. I don't believe there were any trail runners at the time. And so I just took an interest to it. It was one of those things like, okay, well, I've done the road thing. Maybe trails would be kind of interesting. So, you know, I started working on that, and then thought, you know, hey, if I can run a marathon, maybe I can run an ultra marathon. And most ultra marathons started around, 50K, 30, 31, 32 miles. And so actually my first one was Holiday Lake. That was my first 50K run. Quite the experience. I didn't know a single person there. I went out and just did my own thing. And I learned some good lessons on my first ultra. I had been training on roads and did very little trail running at that point. And when I finished, I was like, okay, I realized I had underestimated the dynamic aspects of the trails, the ups and the downs, and how that was going to affect your quads, and how that was going to affect your, just overall running performance. And so when I was finished that race, my quads were just blown, completely blown. I mean, I could barely walk. I always find it fascinating to see at the end, whether it's a marathon or an ultra marathon, see people walk at the end of that. They're walking like zombies because their legs are pretty much shot. It was a great experience, but that was, so it taught me a lesson. It's like, okay, I got to get on the trails more, because I thought I had plenty of miles. I was getting all the, the distances in, but I just wasn't getting the kind of trail experience that I needed. That was in a February race. And I had already signed, even before I had done that race, I had already signed up for my next ultra marathon, which is another one not too far from here. So I was going to go after that one. And so I had to kind of, I thought between these two races, I was like, okay, how do I change my training? How do I change my, my trail, add more trail miles, work on the quads anyway. So I went from finishing my first 50K, I think I was about 50% of the pack. I was right about halfway in the thing, and it was pretty decent. When I got to the next race, I'm just doing my thing. I get finished with the race and I felt much different. It was a much better race. So I don't know, I was probably had past the finish line, maybe 15 or 20 minutes. And then somebody said, hey, your name was just called. They said, aren't you Steve? And they just called my name. And I was like, what in the world? Why would they be calling my name? So I went over where the finish line was. And I said, did my name is Steve Hobeck. And, somebody call my name? Oh, yeah, yeah. You won your age group. I'm like, do what? I was like, what does that mean? I didn't even know what that meant. I mean, it's like, it's like, okay, I won my age group. Yeah, you're the grandmaster winner for this race. And there were, hundreds of people in this race. I was like, holy crap, I can't believe that I just won. And they gave me this nice shirt and all the, nice little, the swag that came with us. Like, oh, I kind of like this swag stuff. And so I was like, I can't believe that I, and I wasn't trying, I wasn't even thinking about it. Well, that was actually a really dangerous thing for me to learn about winning my age group. That was a motivator for me. It's like, okay, well, if I can do it once, let's see if I can do this again. And I think I probably have done, 9 or 10 ultras at this point.
And you're how old now, Steve?
I'll be 65 in another month, so 64. Up to this point, I've won every ultra race in my age group except for one, and I came in second.
Now, let's break this down for the listener, because we tell this story of going from running 1 mile that was painful to getting better and better and just breaking through barriers and limiting beliefs and all this. And it sounds like this smooth, easy journey to winning your age group and almost every ultra marathon you've been in and qualifying for Boston and running a great time. All that. Oh, wow. This is how easy. I've seen the injuries and the setbacks. Can you talk about some of those, including the one that you're dealing with now? But I mean, talk about, this wasn't always, none of it's easy, but I mean, this is even harder than most people would even think with some of the injuries you've dealt with. What kind of doubt creeps in? What kind of?
Oh yeah. Yeah. Well, and I don't know. I don't know if it's uncommon. I expect it's not. When you get to my age, there are things, it's like, you have a limited amount of time. Now, again, I feel like I've been in my age group, I'm pretty much running kind of at an elite level, which I never imagined being able to do. So I actually found out that I'm a good runner. So it's kind of this bizarre thing that I never liked running. I hated it and didn't have any interest in it to becoming like, kind of at the elite level and actually not just loving it, but becoming an obsession. And so, there's always this thing, okay, the risk of injuring, if it takes you out at this point, is this the end for me? Is this, can I continue to, and one of the things that's really been sort of a challenge for me mentally is that realizing that at some point, I'm not going to be as good as I am. I'm, you know, you're kind of going up on a peak, and then, you know, you might be there for a little while, but at some point I know that I'm going to start coming down off of that. And, but, you know, I guess one of the motivators is I want to still be running, if possible, at the elite level at my age, whatever age that is, with the, you know, and trying to compete, and that being a motivator for me. But, you know, I've had a, you mentioned a couple of injuries, and, you know, that is the, especially on trail, there's always the risk of falling and, you know, having a major injury. And I have fallen quite a number of times. Any trail runner is going to fall. It's just a, you know, you get lucky, maybe you fall in some leaves, you don't hit your head against a rock, or, you know, that kind of thing. So there's always a little bit of a risk. And I have, I've hit my head against rocks. And fortunately, none of those prevented me from running. Usually it's, you know, it's the leg injury. But I've had a couple of injuries. One, kind of one of the ultra marathons, which is a crazy stupid one that I did, but I'm glad I checked the box. I won't run it again. It takes place in mid-August at noon at the hottest point of the year, and it's a 30-mile race, and you basically run up a mountain and you run back down, and you do that five times. And I managed to injure both of my Achilles on that race. So I had to come out of that somewhat diminished performance and had to sort of nurse those back. And that kind of set off a number of other possible problems with my running gait changed, and it had affected me to where didn't know it at the time, but ended up having a really major stress fracture. But I had noticed that after that race, I had to kind of compensate for the pain that I was experiencing in my Achilles. The biggest concern that I have is I don't want to run. I don't want to do something that's going to permanently injure me. So I've kind of tried to find that fine line of how can I continue to train and not go over the edge. So anyway, coming off of that injury, I was starting to just affect kind of how I was running, and went into, did an ultra marathon in the February. The injury was in August. I think I'd actually maybe had some smaller races or something up to that point. But in February, I had an ultra marathon. And I noticed after the race, and I did real well, it was a good race for me, but I noticed after the race, I was having some pain in my right calf. It's a little concerning, but I thought, okay, you know, well, so it went away after a couple of days. And then I had another race after that. That was a 25K race. And after that race, again, I noticed I got this pain, but it was more intense during that, after that race, than it was the first time. This was in early March. And anyway, after a few days, it went away. And then April, there is a race in Charlottesville, which is where we live, the Charlottesville 10-miler. And I had done that quite a number of times. And it ran that, and it started hurting during the race. It was probably about mile eight. Anyway, but I got to the end of it, and when I stopped running, I could barely walk. I mean, I was like, I could almost not walk. And I got home, and on my way, I asked my wife to pick me up a pair of crutches, go to Walmart, get me some crutches, because I knew, I was like, I couldn't walk. So I had a couple of days on crutches, and I decided it was time I needed to go to the doctor. So I went, and they diagnosed me with a nerve problem, my sciatic nerve going down there, and it was just manifesting down in that calf area. And so they were okay me continuing to run, but I was starting to do PT, and they wanted to try to work it out. And they thought it was a problem with my L5 and was maybe compressing or something on the nerve. And that's where it was causing the problem down in my calf. And so they continue, you know, it's okay to continue to run because it's a nerve problem. And in my mind, it's like, okay, I can just run through the pain and just deal with it. And then ran Boston again, mid-April, got the first 10 miles of the race, and it was okay. I actually was doing pretty good. And I had lost some training because I just couldn't run the kind of miles that I needed to really train for Boston. But even so, I was in good enough shape that I knew that I could qualify. Anyway, I got to mile 10, pain started to set in. By the time I got to mile 12, the pain was so intense that I couldn't run anymore. I had to walk. For the next 14 miles, I managed to sort of run, walk, hobble along, and made it to the finish line. And it was very disappointing, obviously, because, you know, well, then I got back from the race. That whole, just actually from the end of the race to me getting home was the most amazing, awful experience, just because at that point I was in such severe pain. I ended up in a wheelchair at the airport. And anyway, it was just trying to finally got home. Then I called the doctor and said, you know, I think I need to come in and have a look. I'm not convinced this is a nerve problem any longer. And so I went in, sure enough, they decided to do some imaging done, and had two, what do they call, grade 4 stress fractures in my tibia. And not just one, but two. And which means they like were almost cracked all the way through the bone. in two places. The doctor called me after I had the MRI the next morning, and she's like, you got to get off your leg now. You got to get on crutches and in a boot right away, because if we don't, you are at risk of having to have a rod put in your leg. And I was like, okay, so this is crazy, you know, and I was like, I can't believe this. This is, you know, major injury. And anyway, I was on crutches for 10 weeks in a boot and only got out about 6 weeks ago. And so I'm now making my way back, and I've got a few miles now. I'm up to, I think I'm up to about 5 or 6 miles now.
And for the listener, I had Ruben Gonzalez on the podcast here. We'll have the link to that episode number in the action plan. I don't remember off the top of my head, but if you're not getting the action plans emailed to you every Monday, make sure you get on my email list. Go to jimharshawjr.com/action and you'll get those delivered to you. But I interviewed Ruben Gonzalez, 4-time Olympian in the luge, and he's going for his 5th Olympics. And, you know, it's always great. I get to interview people after they've won, you know, all these accolades and do all these amazing things. And I like to interview people when they're in the midst of challenge. And Ruben is in the midst of a challenge. He had gotten into an accident. It was on the luge track. And we got to talk to Ruben during that. And he's still on his journey back to trying to becoming an Olympian and for 2026 Winter Olympics. And it's the same with Steve. Like, so Steve, we're catching him here at a time when, you know, he's obviously older than he's ever been, and he is dealing with the biggest injury and setback of his running career. And the thing that really triggered me to say, gosh, I got to have Steve on the podcast, was when he said, I've already signed up for my next race. You know, he'd signed up for his next race. The guy can't freaking walk, and he had signed up for a race. So my question for the listener is, how do you approach your adversity, right? Do you set the next goal, set the next standard? Do you learn? He said several times, like during this interview, like, I learned good lessons from his first ultra marathon. He was talking about his first ultra. And what he was saying is like, I failed, I messed up, I screwed up my nutrition and all of that. But it's like, it's learning. Like, you learn by doing, you learn by screwing things up and you get better. And I've gotten to witness this firsthand and to be, you know, a part of Steve's journey. So Steve, what do you say to the listener who's sitting there and wants to level up in some area of their life? And maybe it's running, maybe it's fitness, and maybe that's kind of the easiest way to answer this, or maybe it's just in their life in general, right? Maybe it's in their business, or they want to start a business, or they want to improve their marriage or some area of their life. What do you say to that person who is stuck? Maybe they have dreams that they haven't dreamt. What do you say to them?
So two things. One is, and you've already mentioned this, and of course, you're part of the workout group, and having a community that is supportive is huge. So the community and having a target. Because when I have the community and I actually communicate my target, then I kind of feel accountable to that.
And by the way, I want to mention this. This hit me recently, is you then also find other people who are behind you and saying, okay, Steve, let's go for a run. There's other guys. I don't typically run with Steve because he's crazy. He runs way further than I do. But there's other guys who are like, hey, let's go for a run. Like, people start helping you and they want to be part of you achieving that goal too.
Right, right. And you know, if I've shared my goal, it's like, okay, you know, you mentioned I signed up for a 50K. My doctor's saying, you did what? And I'm okay if I don't do it, but it's a target for me. It's like, okay, I've got something to motivate me to keep going. It's a realistic goal too. I mean, you know, I look out the number of months, I know how long it's going to take me to train to get to a certain point. But having people and the target, you know, those are the two things, because once I've shared my goal or my target, it's like, okay, hey, how's that training coming, Steve? How are you feeling? You know, and especially people that I run with, they know kind of like, hey, are you sure you want to go after this? And generally, most of my runners that I do run with, they know I'm crazy anyway. They know I'm going to push the boundary as far as I possibly can. And even my PT and my doctor, they're all like, you know, you're one of those crazy ones. But I think that's part of it, is just really keeping that target out there and having a community of people that, one, know you and know what you're capable of doing, so that you get in that moment, it's like, now they'll push you. It's pretty simple stuff, really.
Simple.
Simple, not easy, but it is simple. And for the listener, I hope you took a lot of value and lessons out of this. Steve, you're part of my, what I call environment of excellence. It's great to be around you. You just set the bar high and it raises my level, not only in your running, but also just in terms of your business. And also more importantly, just the type of human being you are. So grateful to have you in my orbit. So thank you. And thank you for sharing your lessons with us here today.
Thank you. What a great opportunity. I appreciate it.